Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to The Conservative Cauldron, Bewitching Radio.
Conservative Cauldron Nation. Isn't that cool? Welcome to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm Becky Noble. I want to thank everybody for hanging out and chilling out with me tonight. Once again, my friends, we have made it. We've made it to the promised land. We have made it to that place called Friday. I know it was iffy there for a while. It was iffy for me too. But here we are. The weekend is here. We are ready to go. We are loaded for bear tonight. We've got a ton of stuff to talk about. And so let's get right to it. Today, actually, you know, Friday usually is, well, they call it Document Dump Friday. And there's a reason they call it that, because it's a Friday afternoon. People aren't paying attention. They're thinking about getting the hell out of wherever it is there is to go weekend. And so they do things like, they do things like stuff we're going to talk about. But anyway, the biggest thing I think today probably is the resignation of the Veteran Affairs Secretary, Eric Shinseki. A lot of people have been predicting this for the last week or so. I was kind of the opinion that he needed to go. I did not think that at this stage of the game, I did not think that he would be effective he wouldn't be effective in affecting change that desperately, obviously needs to go on at the VA. I didn't think that he lacks any credibility. He lacks any authority at this point. And you know, this whole scandal, this whole debacle, did not start with Barack Obama. Something of this magnitude doesn't just happen overnight. It started years ago, and it started under different presidents, under different administrations. But the whole thing has blown up under the Obama administration's watch, and it's blown up under Eric Shinseki's watch. And in a statement today, this is from Fox News today, President Obama announced that Eric Shinseki would take the fall for the rapidly growing scandal over veterans' health care, accepting his resignation under pressure from members of both parties and the Democrats, to their credit. Several of them have been calling for Secretary Shinseki's resignation. The president announced that Shinseki would resign after they met in the White House, and he received an update on an internal review of the problems at the VA. The review showed that the problems were not limited to just a few facilities. This problem is not limited to just the Phoenix office, the Phoenix Veterans Hospital, the Phoenix Veterans Administration Hospital. Obama said, adding, "It's totally unacceptable. Our veterans deserve the best." Well, that how nice of him to acknowledge that on the heels of this. On the heels of those and other findings, Obama said, "Secretary Shinseki offered me his own resignation. With considerable regret, I accepted." He said Shinseki told him he did not want to be a distraction. "I agree," Obama said. "We don't have time for distractions. We need to fix the problem." I think we would all agree that, yes, it's more than high time that the problem be fixed.
You're listening to the Conservative Cauldron, Bewitching Radio.
We do know that all of the findings from the Veterans Administration in Phoenix, the deaths of these veterans, everything, all of the facts that have come out during the scandal have proven to be true. The president had been facing mounting calls again from both sides of the aisle, from both sides of Congress, for General Shinseki's resignation. In his piece here on the resignation from Fox News, it says, Shinseki's departure is likely to calm the political storm, but only briefly. Congressional critics of VA leadership voiced support for the decision on Friday, but urged the administration to quickly get to the root of the problem with VA workers lying about patient wait times. VA problems are deadly serious, and whomever the next secretary may be, they will receive no grace period from America's veterans, American taxpayers, and Congress, said Representative Jeff Miller of Florida. He is chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. Speaker of the House John Boehner said about the resignation that it, quote, does not absolve the president. The resignation also has not muted calls for the Justice Department to launch a criminal probe. And I think that that definitely needs to happen. Right now, today, Eric Holder is MIA, to coin a military phrase. I don't believe that anyone has seen or heard from Eric Holder on this matter. I know that I have not. A criminal probe, I think, is definitely in order here. There are people who committed some crimes here in the creation of these lists and the falsifying of documents. The president has stood by General Shinseki as all of this, all of these allegations and all of the stories of wrongdoing have mounted. And I think one of the biggest questions that I hear a lot of people asking about General Shinseki is that surely he knew, he had to have gotten wind of something. Because, again, a scandal of this magnitude doesn't just happen overnight. And everyone, the main argument that I hear, that I read about, and I see, is that General Shinseki had to know something. What it is, we may not know for a while. Surely there's going to be more hearings on this matter. And at some point, I would imagine that General Shinseki will be called to testify before Congress on this. This also says that coming into take over for General Shinseki is the deputy VA secretary, Sloan Gibson. He will be named the acting VA secretary while the administration seeks a permanent replacement. Now, this is going to be an interesting turn of events as well in light of this, because let's face it, whoever is the next VA secretary, they have a major, major mess to clean up. Mess doesn't even begin to cover it. And whoever this is really going to have to work really hard and really fast. There's not going to be a lot of downtime for this person, whoever this person may be. And also in his farewell message to his staff, General Shinseki touted, quote, significant and lasting progress in expanding access for veterans over the last several years, while acknowledging there is more work to be done. Well, yeah, you think? I think that people, in response to a statement like that, I think people's response would probably be, well, General Shinseki, just exactly where is this significant and lasting progress when you have veterans, not just in the Phoenix VA, you have veterans all over the country in other VA facilities who we don't know as yet if there are any other deaths other than the ones that we know about in Phoenix. And even those deaths, those 23 or 24 deaths, that's too many. Even if one of our brave veterans dies because he or she does not get the medical care in the timely way that they need it, that's too much. That's too many. And, you know, we know now that this has gone on not just in Phoenix, but it's gone on all over the country, all over the nation. And so I think that the question that needs to be asked of General Shinseki is just exactly where is this significant and lasting progress? Because when you're talking about 23 to 25 dead veterans, that's not progress. Shinseki, also speaking to some advocates for homeless veterans, said he initially believed that the problems were, quote, limited and isolated. So again, there is the answer to the question. Surely General Shinseki had to have at least some microscopic bit of knowledge about this. And that statement there probably would lead one to believe that yes, he was aware of a problem, but he was not aware of the scope and the magnitude of the problem. So that would lead you to ask the question, why not? Why was he not, I don't want to say kept abreast and kept aware of the situation, because he's the boss. He's the guy. He's the head guy. And if he wants to know what's going on in this agency, he's the boss. He can go in and find out anytime he wants. So why did he not, why weren't there bells and whistles going off with him, you know, making him think that maybe he needs to keep an eye on things at this agency just a little bit closer and be just that much more in the loop? Because maybe had that happened, we could have discovered this a lot earlier than we did, and maybe some of those brave soldiers would be alive today who died waiting for the care that they needed. General Shinseki also said, quote, I no longer believe that it is systemic, meaning he does not believe anymore that these were just limited and isolated incidents, that he does believe that it is systemic. He says, I will not defend it because it is indefensible. To his credit, I'll give him that. He's right. It is indefensible. And, you know, here's the thing, too, is that Eric Shinseki is himself a veteran. He served two tours of duty in Vietnam. I believe, someone can certainly correct me if I'm wrong, that he was shot in the foot or the ankle or so in Vietnam, and part of one of his feet are missing because of a combat injury. So Eric Shinseki is himself a veteran, and were it not that he is a government employee, or at this point is a former government employee, that he himself might be dependent on the Veterans Administration for his medical care. It also says here, before meeting with the president, that the secretary's tone shifted dramatically compared with his testimony before a congressional committee earlier this month, when he continued to defend the VA system. On Friday, citing the IG report, actually it would be the latest IG report, in a long list of probably three or four IG reports, he lamented that, quote, a totally unacceptable lack of integrity at numerous VA facilities where reviews have found workers manipulating wait times to make their internal figures look good. And I think the cherry on the cake of all of this is that the reason that they were manipulating these wait times is because they wanted to get their bonuses. They wanted to get bonuses that were going to be paid to them by the federal government for doing such a great job, for herding these guys through the system in a timely manner, when in fact, nothing could be further from the truth. And, you know, again, I think maybe it is to General Shinseki's credit that maybe he thought a little bit more highly of government employees maybe than he should. The internal audit reviews by Obama on Friday outlined additional problems, including findings that VA staff were pressured to use improper practices. The report said in some cases, pressures were placed on schedulers to utilize inappropriate practices in order to make waiting times appear more favorable. The report said the practices were pervasive enough to require require the VA to re-examine its entire performance management system. So again, right there, maybe is what needs to happen is just some good old fashioned common sense house cleaning from top to bottom. But Eric Shinseki will not be the guy to do it. Right now, it will be to start the process. It will be Sloan Gibson, and we will see what goes on from there. But you know, I think that this for one, this story is not going to go away, because I think that we are going to hear more and more horror stories coming out of not just the VA facility in Phoenix, but in other places all over the country. I've also read reports of the same kind of things, fabricated wait times, you know, secret lists of names of people who were said to have gotten appointments to see the physician and in fact did not, in other places like Miami. So it's not going away anytime soon, folks. And it needs to be fixed, and it needs to be fixed quickly, because people are dying. People who have willingly gone to faraway places, left family and friends and loved ones, and especially after we have just finished celebrating Memorial Day, where we honor the men and women who gave the ultimate sacrifice, and we owe it to those men and women. You know, maybe it's too late for them. Maybe it's too late to help men and women who have already given the ultimate sacrifice in defense of their nation. But it's not too late to fix this system, and we can help their fellow brothers and sisters in arms, and help their fellow soldiers to get the care that they need and get it in a timely fashion, so that we're not hearing about any more deaths of veterans who are waiting for medical care, deaths of men and women who have willingly gone abroad and left friends and family and loved ones to serve our nation and defend it. So it will be interesting in the next couple of weeks here to see just how just what other sort of actions that we get from the Obama administration. We will see who General Shinseki's replacement will be in the coming weeks, I'm sure. And you know, we will go from there, and you know, see what happens with that. But it's a sad thing. It's a sad state of affairs when you have people who are either known or suspected terrorists in places like Guantanamo Bay who are getting better medical care than the men and women who have put their lives on the line in defense of our nation. It's not a pretty picture, and that needs to it needs to change. But let's see. Also, we also had this week. Well, you know, it is it's the season of graduations. Everyone has graduations going on all over the place. And at the United States Military Academy at West Point was no different. We saw the new class of cadets graduate this week from the academy at West Point, and President Obama was there to give the commencement speech this week to the cadets at West Point. And, well, there's a little snippet here of it. There have been some pretty scathing reviews of it. And, well, let's just take a little listen to it.
The United States will use military force unilaterally if necessary when our core interests demand it. When our people are threatened, when our livelihoods are at stake, when the security of our allies is in danger. In these circumstances, we still need to ask tough questions about whether our actions are proportional and effective and just. International opinion matters. But America should never ask permission to protect our people, our homeland, or our way of life. But U.S. military action cannot be the only or even primary component of our leadership in every instance. Just because we have the best hammer does not mean that every problem is a nail. Now, there are a lot of folks, a lot of skeptics, who often downplay the effectiveness of multilateral action. For them, working through international institutions like the UN or respecting international law is a sign of weakness. I think they're wrong. American influence is always stronger when we lead by example. We can't exempt ourselves from the rules that apply to everybody else. We can't call on others to make commitments to combat climate change if a whole lot of our political leaders deny that it's taken place. Because of American diplomacy and foreign assistance, as well as the sacrifices of our military, more people live under elected governments today than at any time in human history. Technology is empowering civil society in ways that no iron fist can control.
Okay, I personally, I'm sure other people do too, I have several questions about this speech. I watched bits and pieces of it. I did not watch the whole thing, but from what I saw was it was flat. It was uninteresting. I felt like that the president was not engaged at all. My first question would be, and I'm going to borrow a phrase from a good friend here, but what in the blue hell does climate change have to do with graduating cadets at the West Point Military Academy? What on earth? How does that fit in any way, shape, or form to cadets graduating from a military academy? The people who are graduating from this academy have gone there because they want, more than likely, they want to make the military their career. So I maybe someone can tell me, how does global warming and climate change, and by the way, that's the new name for it now, because liberals know, the left knows that by calling it global warming now, that for the most part, people are just going to giggle and snicker and think about Al Gore and polar bears and things like that. So now they have labeled it climate change. And the reason given for that is that it's more all-encompassing. So that's my first question, is what on earth does that have to do with cadets graduating from West Point? The other thing, too, is that it seemed like that he was telling people, again, people who are graduating from an academy who probably nine out of 10 of them plan on making the military their career. And he's telling them that when they are sent into a combat situation, that just because we have the best military on the planet, that really doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean that you have to be the, what were his words? Just because you have the biggest hammer doesn't mean every situation is a nail. Okay, well, you know, we've seen the military time and time again under Democratic president leadership. We have seen the military used as a meal on wheels, outfit, and they. They're sent to do more, for lack of a better phrase, they're sent to do more community organizing than anything else. And that's not what the military is meant to do. You know, I like to quote Rush Limbaugh, because he's, well, you know, let's face it, he's the trendsetter. He's the reason that I and a lot of people sit in front of their computers and talk to you, talk to other people. He's the reason why. There's no one like him. He's the trendsetter, and that's the reason that me and a lot of other people quote him. And one of the best quotes that I have ever heard about the military was from Rush, and that he said that the primary job, the primary reason for the existence of the military, yes, it's to defend the United States from all enemies, foreign and domestic. That's the first and foremost, that is their job. That is the main job of the United States military. But what happens when the military is doing that job in order to do it and to do it well, the military's job is to go in and kill people and break things. That's basically it. And most military people will no doubt agree with Rush and say, yeah, that is our prime mission. In the mission of defending the nation and the mission of defending the nation, defending the country, that we're going to kill people and break things. That's what happens. And for the commander-in-chief to be going into telling people who are graduating from a military academy, again, hoping to make the military a career, and you're going to say things to them like, just because we have the biggest hammer doesn't make everything a nail, every situation a nail. Again, what in the blue hell? Because the message that it sends to those people is that when you are sent into military conflict, you're not necessarily being sent there to win. And that's another thing that you don't hear. It's a word that you don't hear a lot from Democratic presidents who are the commander-in-chief. You don't hear words like victory. You don't hear words like win. In regards to when they're talking about sending the military into a conflict situation, into a combat situation, you're not going to hear those words a lot. And it struck me as a very strange speech to give to military academy graduates, because in a sense you are really in a sense he was almost negating all of the training that they had received in their years at West Point. And I've heard this speech throughout the week described in many different ways, and one of the ways that I would disguise, it's been a long week. One of the ways that I would describe this speech was just odd and strange, and I believe that it sent kind of a weird message to the West Point graduates. And anybody also, kind of a little side note to this, is that anybody who has seen any video this week, and I tried to get a clip of the president being introduced, and my converter was down tonight. But anyone who has seen, in a lot of places, when you see the video of the president being introduced, before he gave this speech, I believe it was on Wednesday, the smattering of applause was deafening. It was not, if you put a film of George W. Bush coming to speak to the cadets at West Point, if you put that side by side with a clip of President Obama from the other day, there's no doubt in anyone's mind what's going on there, and the stark contrast there is just it's unavoidable. It's glaring. It's right. It's plain as the nose on your face. It was just a very odd, strange speech to be giving to graduates from West Point who are hoping to go on to make a career of the military. But I'm sure that they, we're still in 2014. I'm sure that we can look forward to, well, how many more years do we have? At least two more speeches like that, that the cadets graduating from West Point the next 2 years can look forward to hearing from their commander-in-chief that, you know, hey, just because you're the toughest kid on the block, you know, so what? Big deal. But I'm going to take a break. We've got lots more to talk about here. I found a really cool story. It's we all love a good murder mystery, a good missing person story. And I will get to that after on the other side of this break. But believe it or not, people, it's Friday. We're here. Let's go. Listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. It is Friday night, people. I am glad that you are here hanging out and chilling out with me tonight. I'm Becky Noble. Thanks for listening, everybody. We are loaded up tonight. We are discussing the resignation today of General Eric Shinseki from the Veterans Administration. Will be very interesting to see where things go from here, and his interim replacement is the assistant VA secretary, Sloan Gibson. he's got one big mess to start attempting to clean up, and he will be the interim head honcho at the Veterans Administration until the Obama administration picks General Shinseki's successor. But also this week, before the president went to West Point to give a weird speech to the graduating cadets, he, for Memorial Day, made a surprise visit to the troops over in Afghanistan. We'll give him credit for that one, to going to surprise the troops who are over there still serving on Veterans Day. But while he was there, the White House, no doubt it was probably, apparently it was the press office, blew the cover of a top CIA agent in Afghanistan. This person's name was included on a list given to reporters during a visit to the country by President Obama. The name was then emailed by the White House press office to a distribution list of more than 6,000 recipients, most of those being members of the media who were covering the story of the president being in Afghanistan. The agent in question, listed as chief of station, would be a top manager of CIA activity in Afghanistan, including intelligence collection and a drone warfare program under which unmanned aerial vehicles mount cross-border attacks into Pakistan. The name appeared on a list of attendees requested by White House officials for the president's visit to Bagram Air Force Base on Memorial Day. The mistake did not come to light until a reporter who filed from Afghanistan, that reporter was Washington Post correspondent Scott Wilson, looked more closely at what he had sent and noticed the name in the title. So it was a reporter who actually discovered this. When it did come to light, very shortly afterwards, after Scott Wilson, the reporter for the Washington Post, discovered this, he said, I think that they talked to their bosses and realized that it was not okay, and they tried to figure out what to do about it, if there was any way to kind of unring the bell. Well, you know, when you when someone's title is chief of station, in essence, that means they're a spy. And there's really no way to put that genie back in the bottle. There was a subsequent report filed from Bagram Air Base, and the name of this person was left off that report. The White House would not comment on this. There is going to be an investigation, or there is now an investigation underway to find out exactly what happened here and why this person's name was so cavalierly put on a list for all the world to see. And if not all the world, well, you know, 6,000 members of the American media, a.k.a. for all the world to see. But, you know, this situation was really very interesting, because this is not the first time in recent history that a CIA agent's cover was blown. I believe you will all remember the name Valerie Plame. Valerie Plame's husband, Joe Wilson, was a State Department guru, and he was very very vocal about his opposition to the war in Iraq. And when Valerie Plame's identity was leaked, you know, the words traitor and treason were very, very loosely thrown about the Bush administration and about President George W. Bush himself. Valerie Plame, in her statement about this week, said, this is from the Washington Examiner, she said, quote, "My understanding is it was a military aide who compiled this list of those that were greeting the president when he came. Colossally stupid, but I think it was inadvertent. It was an error, really stupid. The White House apparently has said that they're going to do an investigation, and they'll find someone who's really embarrassed at the end of it." Okay, so that is a very, very different way, a very different opinion about the blowing the cover of a CIA operative, then when this happened to Valerie Plame herself, and this piece goes on to say, many observers seem satisfied with the White House's explanation that the incident was just a regrettable error, and that is indeed what it appears to be. But such assessments represent a remarkable change in tone from the discussion several years ago when the George W. Bush administration leaked Valerie Plame's identity as part of a bitter fight over the origin and direction of the Iraq War. Back then, it was quite common to hear the words traitor and treason used to describe top Bush officials involved in the controversy. And we know that an innocent man went and spent time in jail because of this, and that would have been Scooter Libby, who was convicted in this case. And, you know, this is, it really, if go look it up. The Washington Examiner is called When Bushies Blew a CIA Cover, It Was Treason. Now It's a Mistake. And the whole thing, I wish I had time to read the whole thing here. It really is a great piece here. It's by Byron York. So, you know, it's good. But, you know, again, it's very different. When it's your guy, oh, it's just a mistake. It's just, you know, it was inadvertent, and, you know, somebody will be very embarrassed by it. But, you know, when it's very interesting that when it happens to you, you know, words like traitor and treason, words like those are thrown about. And it's just, it's a very different reaction depending on who the occupant of the White House is now, isn't it? But while we're talking about occupants of the White House, and you know, maybe we can broaden that description and talk about the left, basically. You know, when we're talking about the White House, and we're going to be talking about the White House a whole lot more the closer we get to. Even the closer we get to this November, November 2014 and the midterm elections, but not just that, but as soon as those midterm elections are on, for all intents and purposes, the 2016 presidential election begins. Whether we like it or not, whether people are saying, oh my God, how much earlier can we do this? It's like shopping for Christmas in July. You know, that's the way of it, and that's the way it works. So, and we know that... there's a 99.99999 chance that Hillary Clinton is going to run for president. I think it's, you know, she's gonna pretend to leave everybody guessing for a while, I guess. But so as that gets closer and it becomes a little more inevitable, I guess, shall we say? And really, Democrats are. From everything that I read and that I see, are really not liking the inevitability factor with Hillary Clinton. But the point I'm trying to make badly is that the whole war on women thing is going to be much more front and center. And all of the people back in 2007 and 2008 who disagreed with Barack Obama, and if you disagreed with Barack Obama, you were immediately branded a racist. Well, brace yourselves, kids. Buckle your seatbelts, because come 2015, 2016, if and when Hillary Clinton makes that announcement, if you disagree with Hillary Clinton, well, you're no longer a racist. Now you're a sexist. And so get ready, because the whole war on women thing is going to get ramped up. And because the Democrats know they're in trouble. They know they're in trouble with Obamacare, and I've got another story about that right here. They know they're in trouble with Obamacare. They know they're in trouble with scandal after scandal after scandal from this administration, and so they're grasping. They're grasping at straws, and so the whole war on women thing is really going to get pushed. But, you know, if we're going to talk about the war on women, let's talk about, let's talk about a woman in the Sudan who is... going to be executed because she married a Christian. I don't know how many people have heard this story. This woman's name is Maryam Yanya Ibrahim. She is 27 years old. her husband is a Christian. And the Sudan is, well, you think Saudi Arabia is not a piece of cake for non-Muslims? Well, the Sudan might make Saudi Arabia look like a picnic. This woman has been sentenced to death for refusing to renounce her Christian faith. She gave birth in prison last week to a baby girl, and she could now be lashed over 100 times, even as she's permitted to nurse her newborn daughter for 2 years before the execution is carried out. She, like I said, she gave birth early Tuesday to a girl in the hospital wing of a prison in Omdurman. Her attorney told Fox News by phone from Khartoum. Miriam is fine. The baby is fine, says the lawyer. The baby's name is Maya. But this is not the end of it. Miriam's husband, Daniel Wani, tried to visit Miriam and his new daughter, but he was not allowed. The cherry also on the cake of this is that the couple's 20-month-old son, Martin, is also in prison with Miriam and the baby right now. Here's the thing, is that Miriam Ibrahim has never been a Muslim. She was raised Christian from the start. Her father was a Christian, I believe. I'm looking at this article right now. This is also from Fox News. We have not heard anything from the State Department about this case. There are petitions flying. There are many, many people who are trying to come to the defense of Miriam and try to get her and her children released from this prison. It says here the court in Khartoum ruled earlier that Ibrahim must give birth and nurse her baby for 2 years before being executed. How lovely of them. But must receive 100 lashes for adultery immediately after having the baby. The Sudanese government, the pro-Muslim government here, believes that because Miriam is married to a Christian man, therefore her marriage is not legitimate, therefore her children are not legitimate. They were married in a formal ceremony in 2011. The couple operates several businesses, including a farm south of Khartoum, the country's capital. Wani fled to the United States as a child to escape the civil war in southern Sudan, but later returned. He is not permitted to have custody of the little boy because the boy is considered Muslim and cannot be raised by a Christian man. Sudan's penal code criminalizes the conversion of Muslims into other religions, which is punishable by death. Muslim women in Sudan are further prohibited from marrying non-Muslims, although Muslim men are permitted to marry outside their faith. Children, by law, must follow their father's religion. The Sudan has introduced Islamic Sharia law as early as the 1980s, and this story has just recently come to light. She was charged, Miriam Ibrahim was initially charged with having illegitimate sex last year, but she remained free pending jail. She was later charged with apostasy and jailed in February after she declared in court that Christianity was the only religion she knew. She had been raised a Christian. And, here's if we're going to talk about the war on women, let's talk about a woman who is facing execution. She's raising her children in prison. She's not permitted to see her husband. Her husband is not permitted to take the children anywhere. It's an incredibly horrible situation. And as far as I can tell, there's been no one from the State Department. Secretary of State John Kerry has made no statement about this. And it's kind of, there's starting to be a list. Along with the list of scandals, we're starting to have a list of people who are being held in foreign countries against their will on these bogus, trumped-up charges. And these are American citizens. And no one is lifting a finger to get these people home. We have the Marine in Mexico who is being held right now against his will after trying to do the right thing to tell the Mexican government that he had brought guns accidentally over the border. And we have this woman now in the Sudan who is being held. Her children are American citizens. Her children are American citizens who are being held in this prison. Her husband is an American citizen. What are we doing? What are we doing to get these people released? We have Pastor Saeed in Iran. He's going on 2.5 years now being imprisoned. The very minimal attempts have been made to get him home. Is it any wonder why other nations around the world, and particularly nations that are not our friends, people in countries who do not like us, view us as a paper tiger and view us as weak when we can't even get our own people out of foreign countries that are not necessarily friendly to us? It's outrageous. It's completely outrageous. And I know that there are many, many online petitions to hopefully get the State Department involved, get Secretary of State John Kerry involved in this case, so that we can get Maryam Ibrahim home with her children, and not just her, but so that we can get our Marine home from Mexico, so that we can get Pastor Saeed home from Iran, so that we can get all of these people out of these countries that are being held against their will because they know that the United States is not going to do anything about it. So if we're going to talk about the war on women, maybe the first person that we need to talk about here while she's still alive is Maryam Ibrahim. Because right now, whether the left likes it or not, she's the face of the war on women. She's the face. So next time you have some lefty in your face talking about the war on women, mention Maryam Ibrahim and see if they even know who she is. Because I'll bet you 9 times out of 10, they do not. Oh, they know who Sandra Fluke is, but they don't know who Maryam Ibrahim is. So please go online. I wish I had a definite website to give. In fact, I will look some up, and next time I will give out some websites here where there are some petitions to be signed, and that hopefully we can get some action going on Miriam's case and get her home to her, get her and her children home. Also, there was a little thing this week, and it's kind of a local thing here. Mentions Barnes Jewish Hospital here in St. Louis. And what is happening here is that most hospitals, if you are so many steps below the poverty line, below the national poverty line, you can go into the emergency room of that hospital and get care. But what is happening now in a lot of places, Barnes Jewish Hospital being one of them, is that they are starting to charge for care for the uninsured who come in through the emergency room. And you might say, well, why would that be? Why would, when people can just go online and sign up for Obamacare and all of a sudden there are rainbows and sunshine and everything is great? Well, not so fast, because here's the problem. The problem is that let's say that you are an uninsured person and you say, okay, I'm going to go online and I'm going to sign up for Obamacare. So you go online and you go to sign up and you look at all of the plans and you look at the prices of all of those plans, and they're expensive. They're very expensive. There are plenty of people who will tell you who have lost insurance through their employer that are paying exorbitant amounts of money now on premiums that they were not previously. And so even if you are someone who qualifies for a subsidy, you're still not able to pay the premiums. They're still too high. And so you have no other choice when you need medical care but to go to that emergency room. And so now what is going to happen is that the emergency room are charging for a portion of these people who are eligible for the Affordable Care Act, and they're eligible for it even, you know, with a subsidy, and they still cannot apply to do so. And So it's really kind of interesting that the very group of people that the Affordable Care Act was designed to help, it's not helping. It's still leaving them uninsured because even with a subsidy, even with a federal subsidy, they still can't afford the premiums in order to sign up for the Affordable Care Act. And it's just, it's a catch-22. It's a vicious circle. And it's another unintended consequence. Maybe if we had actually read the bill before we signed it into law, I know that would, you know, that would have gotten Nancy Pelosi's bloomers all in a wad, but maybe if we had just read the bill, we would have known this beforehand. Now we know what's in it. Yeah, thanks, Nance. We know what's in it now. Anyway, we talked about a lot of heavy stuff tonight, so I got a good murder mystery here for you. This is from Oregon. This is from NBC. It says, forensic DNA sleuths may be close to finding the truth behind one of the oldest unsolved missing person cases in U.S. history. The breakthrough will be too late for Marvin Clark, who vanished during a trip to Portland on Halloween weekend, 1926, and would be more than 160 years old were he alive today, according to a report Wednesday by the Associated Press. The case has been cold for 90 years, but investigators have used modern DNA technology and several online databases to find three great-great-grandchildren on Clark's paternal side. They're now working to locate someone on his mother's side to shore up the results. Clark was a well-known Tigard, Oregon resident who went missing while traveling by bus to visit his daughter in Portland on October 30th, 1926, according to the Oregonian newspaper at the time. He was reportedly between 60 and 75 years old. A frantic search and a $100 reward, more than $1,300 in today's money, returned no results, despite police across the Northwest being told to look out for Clark, who was partially paralyzed and had a, quote, hanging gait. That's a little politically incorrect by today's standards now, isn't it? Hanging gait. What, they don't like disabled people? Anyway. Then, 60 years later, on May 10th, 1986, loggers in Portland discovered a skeleton alongside some unusual belongings. An 1888 V-nickel, a 1919 penny, a pocket watch, leather shoes, wire-rimmed glasses, a Fraternal Order of Eagles pocket knife, and four tokens with the inscription D and P, believed to be tavern tokens awarded in card games and used to buy alcohol. Police also found a corroded revolver and an expended .32 caliber bullet. A single shot had entered the skull at the temple. Medical examiners, who said at the time, said it was the oldest case they ever had, ruled the unknown man's death a suicide. The case went cold again. That was until Dr. Nikki Vance of the Oregon State Medical Examiner's Office made the recent breakthrough when she entered Clark's name into the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System, a free system used by officials to try to put names to unidentified corpses. So that might be really with, you know, technology and modern DNA now that maybe they can finally find out what happened to Mr. Clark and the mystery of his disappearance will finally be solved after all of these years. That would be pretty remarkable, and I'm sure a lot of his family members have gone to their graves not knowing what happened to him, but maybe his descendants will now finally find out what happened to Marvin Clark when he tried to go to visit his daughter and never made it there. Anyway, that is about it for me tonight. I want to thank everybody for hanging out and chilling out with me tonight. Please go to where it all started, conservativecauldron.blogspot.com. I did a best of this week for Memorial Day because, well, I couldn't have said it any better myself. And, well, I did. But so that was there this week. Please go to facebook.com/BeckyNoble. I am on Twitter at Patriot Witch. I will soon be posting some stuff on Kevin Jackson's website, blacksphere.net. So please be looking for me there. Please, please, please go to newsninja2012.com. And also check out War Radio on 365live.com. I'm running out of room to say all the things that we got going on here, including Blog Talk Radio and Team Ninja. So please go to newsninja2012.com and check out all of the great pieces by my colleagues. And there will be some coming new and improvements to Conservative Cauldron Radio here, hopefully soon in the coming weeks. And please check out blacksphere.net. I'm out of here tonight. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron. See you next time.